The closing market report is made possible in part by a grant from Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, a full-service commodities firm with two toll-free lines. In Illinois, 800-252-2013. In Indiana, 800-637-3123. Or email to cooley at admworld.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's June the 30th, 2008, USDA Acreage Report Day. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's the Senior Grains Analyst at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. And later in this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons in Champaign County. And don't forget, in just 26 minutes, we'll check in with the folks at Chesapeake Energy to discuss the global agricultural weather forecast. And along the way, we'll hear from University of Illinois Extension Ag Economist Darrell Good. He'll take us through all the numbers from the report and give us his assessment of what it means as we go through the growing season. It all happens on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL, public radio from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Monday afternoon, futures finished the day like this after USDA released its latest grain stocks and acreage report. July futures in the wheat pit 52 cents lower at 843.5 for the July. September at 858.75, down 53.25. And December wheat at $8.81.75, down 53.75. July corn futures 724.75, the limit lower down 30 cents, as was the September at 737.75, the December at 757, and the March at 773.75. All the corn contracts down the limit 30 lower for the day. July soybean futures 1605 up 23.5. August at 1598 up 19. September beans at 1584, 17.5 higher. And the November futures at 1574 up 14.5 on the afternoon. July bean meal at 434 up 610. July bean oil at 6604 up 47. June live cattle futures at $100.60 down 37.5. The August futures at 103.42.5 down $1.67.5, and the August feeders at 111.87.5, 15 cents higher. September's at 113.55, up 27.5. July lean hog 71.77.5, down $1.42.5. The August at 70.90, $1.80 lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. The nearby crude oil futures are trading the August contract at $140.15. That's down 6 cents a barrel. September futures at $140.69, down 6 cents as well. July ethanol at $2.84 even is down 7 7/10. The August futures at $2.83, down 8 3/10. Natural gas trading the August at $13.36 7/10. That's 16 9/10 higher. The September up 16 6/10 at $13.42 8/10. Heating oil futures, July contract at $3.88 9/10, down 1 6/10. August futures at $3.92 7. That's down just about 5/10 for the day. July propane oil, or July propane, rather, at $1.86 7/10 is unchanged on the day. And the gold futures are now trading the nearby July at $926.20 an ounce, down $3.10 at this hour. The Dow Jones Industrial Average stands at 11,394 at this hour, up just about 50 points. The U.S. dollar at 72.45 is up 0.17, and the CRB index at 462.99 is down 141 on the afternoon. A flood warning, of course, still in effect for some rivers in western Illinois, that until further notice. Tonight, our own meteorologist Scott Althoff says it'll be mostly cloudy skies. Lows will range from 51 in northeastern Indiana to 59 in southwestern Illinois. Tomorrow, mostly sunny. Highs will range across the two-state region from 82 in northeastern Indiana to 88 in the southwestern parts of Illinois. The extended forecast says the next chance of significant rainfall will occur Wednesday night through Friday, with some of the locations on the southern half of Illinois and southern two-thirds of Indiana picking up well over an inch of rain.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Leonard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers in East Central Illinois. Leonard Seed Service provides customer services and agronomic information to help customers maximize profits. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Kurt Kimball of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's go through the numbers very quickly as they came out from USDA this morning. Corn acreage now at 87.327. While that is down 7% from last year, it is up from the March intentions of 86.014. Soybean plantings at 74.533 million acres. And it is up 17% from last year. The all-wheat acreage is up 5%. What did you make of those numbers when they were given to you at 7:30 today?
Well, it came in a little higher than what most people were looking at. And, you know, a lot of it, as mentioned before, has contributed to the publicity that the weather has done to the Midwest crop here. But where the error or mistake was made by a lot of the analysts was that it should be taken off harvested acres. So, you know, a lot of the crop did get in the ground, then was flooded out. Then secondly, we saw that the trade might have miscalculated the March planting intentions report. Judging by that, we underestimated those acres too. So the two combined together put a higher benchmark to go by. You know, those numbers are out. The key to the whole thing is harvested acres and what type of harvested acres number we go from here is the key to the whole report. But when you take the acreage and figure a harvested acres, the bottom line still and always will be is yield, what type of yield you put on it, and that's going to move the bottom line more than anything, Todd.
Yeah, growers expected to harvest 78.9 million acres, according to USDA. That's down 9% from last year, but it was still the second highest harvested acres, I think, since 1944, and that's behind last year only. So the harvested acres there, according to USDA, will be large as well. Is it enough to put a lot of pressure on the corn market? How much more downward pressure is there?
Well, that's a good question. We'll see what happens. Initially, to answer your question, we'll probably open 8 to 10 lower tonight. When you look at option volatility, that suggests where we should open up at. The key will be probably down to this 738 level. That was last Monday's low, so that would be another 20 cents lower from here, and that'd be the area to try to hold. Failure to hold that, we could probably put in more of a sizable correction to the downside. We could maybe get into a 50% correction down to the late May, early June low of $6. You know, we'll see if that materializes or not. But a lot of it was, you know, some long liquidation here. Open interest has been going down over the last few days. Today was month end. And that shocking report to the bulls of a higher acreage number sort of all fell in place today. So the key will be to watch tonight's trade and see if we can find some stability here as we go in tomorrow morning's open at 9:30.
No, thanks much, Kurt.
Right.
Kurt Kimball is with Grainfield Futures out of Normal, Illinois, joins us on the Closing Market Report on Monday afternoons.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from WILL Public Radio for the Farming World. I'm your host, University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined in studio by Darrell Good, Extension Ag Economist at the U of I, to take up this morning's USDA acreage and grain stocks reports. Good afternoon to you, Darrell.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with the numbers. We've been through them once already for the show, but why don't you go through them again for me, please?
Well, on the stock side, what we found on June 1, corn inventories a bit over 4 billion bushels, probably a full 100 million bushels more than the market had anticipated. Soybeans, 676 million bushels, pretty close to the average trade guess, and so not much of a surprise there. Again, on the acreage side, USDA estimating planted acres at 87.3 million. That's a full 2 million acres more than the average trade guess, about 1.3 million more than March intentions. Harvested acres, a bit over 78 million acres, 78.9. Again, more than the market was looking for. Soybeans, on the other hand, we saw acreage come in at 74.5 million. That's only about 260,000 less than indicated in March. So in line with the stocks number, there was not as much surprise in the soybean acreage. So the focus in these reports was really on the corn market.
Yeah, it's one of these reports where the numbers come out and they compare usually to last year's numbers, and you saw a lot of downs, except for soybeans. But when you start really thinking about it and looking back at the planting intentions report and you see some numbers that are up, certainly the trade was not expecting a bigger corn acreage number, right, yet they got one.
You know, that's right. And a few people did see it that way, but most did not. And I think it goes back to something you and I talked about, among others, probably after we saw the March intentions report and the sharp increase in corn prices we saw at that time. And we said, won't farmers try to plant more corn than indicated, more than the 86 million acres? And I think what this report says is, yes, they in fact did that. They responded where they could to the big price increase following the March report. Probably did not get as much planted as they would have. 87.3 million planted. We were guessing they might get 88 or 89 if we'd had good weather, but certainly the response, I think, was pretty clear that they were trying to move corn acres up. This report confirms that. And then it also confirms that it looks like we will abandon maybe about 1.3 million acres more than we normally do because of the flooding situation. So everything, you know, when you look back at it, certainly everything appears logical in this report as far as the acreage numbers go.
Do you think USDA did enough surveys to get things correct at this point?
I think they did as well as they could. They indicated that they were able to contact about 1,200 producers in a five-state area, asking them to reassess their plantings and harvesting intentions, and that information was incorporated into this. I don't think anybody believes perhaps that they've completely captured the effects of the flooding and the lateness of the corn in many areas. And they do indicate that they will resurvey those affected areas in July, and we'll get some new numbers, perhaps, or revised numbers in the August crop production report. We normally don't get that, but it follows a pattern that they established in 1993 when we had that flooding. They did some additional survey work. So I think they've done an admirable job trying to adjust to the situation, collected as much information as they could. And we'll wait and see what they find out in July.
Can you discern from the numbers where changes really were reflected on corn acreage?
Well, we did. We saw big increases in a few acres, Texas, Nebraska, areas like that. The big cuts compared to March intentions were really Illinois and Iowa. I think down 300,000 acres in Illinois, 500,000 in Iowa from March intentions. Indiana on corn was about the same as indicated in March. So we had states moving both directions. I guess I would throw the Dakotas into the acreage increase area as well as Minnesota. So kind of the western, northern growing areas got a little more corn acres planted other than Iowa, Illinois down.
What do we know about the harvested acres? This is one that maybe we ought to take up in terms of the flood and what the differences are between 1993 and today. I guess the big difference is time. There's a month difference in when the floods came.
That's exactly the point, I think, Todd. 1993, there was really not much opportunity to replant the lost acres to anything, let alone to corn, because the flooding really kind of peaked in late July in 1993, left no time to dry out and replant. In contrast, this year, as you indicate, the flooding occurred about a month earlier. A lot of the river bottoms obviously will not dry out and get replanted, but some of the inland areas, all the ponding, much of that is able to get replanted. So now the question is, will it mature in time to be harvested? We certainly need a favorable growing season right through September, I think, this year, to make sure that we don't cut the growing season short, get an early freeze. But a significant difference compared to 1993.
And there is, I suppose, where many in the trade who want to still be bullish will hang their hats. They'll say, well, maybe the harvested acres will be there, but will they get frozen?
Right.
Will there be a frost? And that'll be the next big turn of events once we get to September or October. On the upside, the question between then and now, or now and then, I suppose, is what happens to the marketplace for corn and for soybeans? How far do you think it can trade off on the corn before it stabilizes?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, we've gone up so high so fast. How much downside is there? I mean, the initial reaction limit down was more than really I thought we would get. I thought if this was a normal year, this kind of report would give us limit down. Will the market discount the numbers enough that we won't? But we certainly did. So we saw December corn trade to almost $8. If, in fact, we move into a period here of a little more benign weather and we become a bit more optimistic about improvement in the corn crop, certainly seeing prices decline a dollar from their highs would not be an unreasonable expectation, I think. Still leaves us at very high prices, but you just have to recognize that there was a lot of crop loss built into $8 corn. We're also seeing some cutback in consumption at current prices. So I think this was a significant turning point if we have generally favorable weather from here on out.
What's the bottom line on the soybean statistics as they came out this morning?
I think the bottom line is still very tight stocks of soybeans. We're using soybeans, I think, a bit more rapidly than the USDA has projected, certainly on the export side. And so I think we're going to end the year even a little tighter than what the USDA has projected. At the outside, we could still see a 3 billion bushel crop in 2008, but that will not allow much of a rebuild, if any, of inventory. So we're going to remain nip and tuck, I think, and a lot will hinge on what South America does in subsequent months with these high prices, but for right now it looks pretty tight. I think you could argue that with some of the uncertainty gone on the acreage side, that prices could moderate somewhat even with these tight stocks in front of us. But like corn, we're going to be on pins and needles for the rest of the growing season.
Sure looks like the livestock industry, the quarterly hogs and pigs report, didn't show what you might have thought, which would have been liquidation. It didn't show it again.
It did not. I mean, we were a little concerned and still are that because of the timing of the survey, I think much of that data was collected before the last really leg up in corn prices. But still, a prolonged period of extremely high corn prices on the surface doesn't seem to have discouraged that industry very much. From expansion, numbers are large. Farrowing intentions are fairly large. I think part of the issue may have been that hog prices, particularly hog futures, continued to show some pretty strong movement up in the month of June with prospects maybe that corn prices had topped out. We still have the attitude, let's hang on a few more months and we can get back into a more profitable situation.
So the livestock sector hanging on. Ethanol's future, I suppose, rides in Washington, D.C. The larger than expected acreage in this report enough to at least have that momentum slow down to roll back the RFS?
You know, I think so, that it will take some pressure off. And frankly, I don't think RFS is the issue, really. I think a lot of people would argue that separate from the renewable fuel standards, it's the economics of ethanol that make a difference. And if we continue with the blender's tax credit and ethanol is profitable to the blender, we'll continue to demand and produce ethanol regardless of the renewable fuel standard. So it's really that issue, and that was pretty much settled in the Farm Bill. We're going to stay with a pretty aggressive blender's tax credit there. Margins have gotten razor thin and in the red for some ethanol plants. But again, if we see a bit of a setback in corn prices, crude oil shows no signs of retreating. That means gasoline and ethanol prices should stay pretty high. I think the economics of ethanol will probably improve somewhat over the next 2 or 3 months.
Historically, and I don't know whether you'll have an answer to this question or not, historically, how long do governments hold to protecting a fledgling industry? And I'm going to say, I mean, we've been doing this since 1972, roughly speaking, but once it really got started, and let's just roll it back to 2002 and say that's where we really started with protecting or trying to develop an ethanol industry in the United States that was bigger and more viable. How long will they protect it?
That's an excellent question, Todd. I'm not sure we have enough observations to make a determination on that. If you just look at agricultural production as an industry, you know, we started in the 30s with a program to protect, and that's lasted for 70 years now. Once those programs are in place, they're really hard politically, I think, to completely retract, although I think Congress in particular has shown a willingness to start scaling back, and I think there will be some scaling back of perhaps the blender's tax credit, some scaling back of the import tariff on ethanol, but only as the industry shows that it has matured, and I think we're getting pretty close to that with the plants. If we ever completed the plants that are on the books right now, I think that's where most people see this phase in the industry kind of plateauing, and that might say we're in a strong enough position to stand on our own.
I'll have to go back and consult a book that I have by Leo Windisch called The Soybean Pioneers, I believe, where A.E. Staley convinced Congress that he didn't want to import soybeans from Manchuria and asked them to put a tariff on soybean imports to develop a soybean industry in the United States, because in the early 1900s, we just didn't raise soybeans, and he wanted to crush oil.
Right. I mean, we did a lot of things then to support soybeans. We allowed soybeans to be planted on set-aside acres for corn at no penalty, so that industry was given a pretty big boost in a number of ways.
And I think it took about 10 years, but I'll go back and look that up and maybe report back later. Thanks much, Daryl.
Thank you, Todd.
Daryl Good, Extension Ag Economist at the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from WILL in Urbana-Champaign, the home of the land grant in Illinois, the U of I. Please visit our website. The address is willag.org. In 2 minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast right here.
It's National Orange Blossom Day. The orange originated in Southeast Asia. The orange blossom, which is the state flower in Florida, is associated with good fortune, and at one point in U.S. history was popular in bridal bouquets and head wreaths for weddings. The petals of orange blossoms can be made into a version of rose water that's popular in Middle Eastern cuisine. On this day in agricultural history in 1829, British scientist James Smithson died. He left an endowment to the U.S. to fund an establishment for the increasing and sharing of knowledge. In 1846, President James K. Polk signed off on an act of Congress to establish the Smithsonian Institute. In 1959, the St. Lawrence Seaway connecting the Great Lakes with the Atlantic was opened. And in 1960, chlorophyll was first synthesized by Robert Burns Woodward at the Converse Memorial Laboratory of Harvard University in Cambridge, Massachusetts. The molecule consisted of 72 hydrogen atoms, 55 carbon atoms, and thrown in for good measure, 5 atoms of oxygen and 1 atom of magnesium. Woodward received the Nobel Peace Prize in Chemistry for his work in 1965. And that's this day in agricultural history.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Time now to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Josh Darr of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Josh.
Hey, Todd. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing magnificent. Weather here has just been really great over the last week and a half. It looks like it's going to continue just a little bit longer. The dew points have been really low.
Yeah, this is a northwesterly flow, and we're getting air masses coming out of Canada here as of the last couple of days, and that's resulting in some lower dew points and just fantastic weather out there. And that, you're right, that's going to continue here through Wednesday, Thursday of this week, and as we get to the 4th of July, unfortunately, a frontal boundary is going to be sagging south across the Midwest, and that includes most of Illinois, southern and central portions of Illinois on Friday, and bring a chance of clouds and thunderstorms in the afternoon on the 4th of July.
Well, that's not good news. A lot of fireworks to be had on the 4th of July. If you look a little further out into the weekend as we celebrate the nation's development, what do you see?
Well, past the 4th, things start to clear out as you get into Saturday and Sunday. Sunday, Illinois, Indiana should be in great shape, actually, by that period. Saturday, there'll be a little bit of residual moisture to start the day, and then as you go through the day on Saturday, things should improve. So it's really this front coming through on Friday, may hang around Saturday morning, and then starts to clear the area later on Saturday. And back to these wonderful conditions.
Are the folks out west getting the same kind of treatment as they go through wheat harvest?
Yes. I mean, they're catching some good weather here after the unusually wet conditions this spring and even up into the past couple weeks. Harvest should be going quite well this week. There is some concern, though. Once you get, you know, late in the next weekend and into, you know, week two of our forecast, things do start to get a little bit more unsettled again with frequent rainfall chances. Not as severe as we've seen as of the past month or so, but still active above normal precip chances next week, and that may slow down things a bit.
That's that persistence we tend to talk about and have been talking about
sure.
for 6 months here, I suppose, on
yeah,
the air.
Exactly. It feels like a long time.
It does seem like a long time. I think that we started talking about that in March because we'd been persistently wet since December. So
exactly.
I guess we can stay that way for a while. You want to take a stab at anything further out than that?
You know, longer term, I think the interesting aspect is this ridge of high pressure that's anchored over the Rockies right now. That's where your real anomalous heat is. It's in the Pacific Northwest, the far northern plains. I think an item to watch as you walk through the month of July is that potentially coming further east. And into by mid-July, maybe it's centered over western Nebraska. I think the key question for us in looking out, you know, on a 30, 45-day horizon is, does that make it to Iowa in the back half of July or Illinois by the first half of August? And if it does, that's going to happen during pollination. And whenever you bring a ridge over the area at that time, you know, you got to watch it very carefully. So
pollination.
That's the big risk out there right now.
Pollination will be later than certainly it has been the last several years across the Midwest for the corn. How's the crop in China doing?
Crop in China is doing great. They by and large, very well. There were some dryness issues up north, but were alleviated over the weekend with some great rains in Heilongjiang province. And so, you know, things in China are going great here. They are trending above normal temps, and that's usually actually on the nighttime mins over the next 2 weeks here. And as we get in the back half of July, that's an area to watch for heat as well.
Thanks much, Josh.
All right, Todd.
Josh Darr is with Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois. Somebody from that office joins us on Monday afternoons on the Closing Market Report to take a complete at the global agricultural weather forecast. If you'd like to listen to what Josh had to say again, you can do it on our website. The address is willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. You have a good afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.